This is Talk of the Nation. I'm Neil Conan in Washington. Way back when, the medium for movies was celluloid. If you wanted to watch a film at home, you needed a projector. Of course, the advent of videotape recorders changed all that in the 1980s. Now DVDs drive the market, and thanks to mail-order rental companies like Netflix, brick-and-mortar stores like Blockbuster are no longer the only places to rent or buy movies. New technology, video on demand, and internet computer files could revolutionize this business again in a few years and change not just the way movies are distributed, but how they're made. Before that happens, critical legal questions have to be addressed, and studios have to be convinced that internet piracy won't destroy their profits. This hour, a look at where the movie industry is headed and how that affects how you watch the movies and which movies you watch. Later in the program, Congress summons some of the biggest stars in baseball to testify about steroids. Alan Schwartz will join us. But first, the future of movies. We want to hear about your movie habits and how technology affects the way you watch films. Our number here in Washington is 800-989-8255. That's 800-989-TALK. The email address is totn@npr.org. And we turn first to Chris Anderson, editor-in-chief of Wired Magazine. He's with us from the studios of member station KQED in San Francisco. Chris, nice to have you back on the program.
That's a pleasure. Thank you.
At first glance, what we're seeing in the movie industry looks a lot like what happened to the music business over the last few years. Is that an apt comparison?
Well, the similarities are many. I mean, you're talking about industries that are going digital, that can be, you know, consumed on computers, distributed throughout the house. But there's differences as well. I mean, one thing is that the music industry is kind of going through a crisis right now. Its business is turned down, whereas Hollywood's never had it better, thanks in large part to the DVD boom.
Mm-hmm.
So in a sense, you know, clearly, they're kind of on similar paths, but Hollywood is not in crisis mode and has more time to work out what they're going to do.
And the big controversy, of course, in the music business involved Napster and the sharing of music files. It's a lot more difficult, but by the nature of the movies themselves.
It is. I mean, and again, those the two big differences. One is that, of course, movies are, you know, 10 times as large a file as, mm-hmm. as a music file. And the second is that although CDs came out of the gate unencrypted, so anybody can rip them, DVDs, you know, came out in digital form with encryption intact. So everybody knows how to rip a CD, but very few people know how to rip a DVD. And so there's just fewer files, you know, sloshing around out there.
Now let's talk about some of the technology that's out there, starting with one we already mentioned, video on demand, or VOD. What is it? How does it work?
Well, video on demand is something we've been talking about for 10 years.
I mean, it's, you know, it's been the next big thing for 10 years, too.
Forever. I mean, you know, I was looking at some of the old covers of Wired back in the early 90s and John Malone and you know, the information superhighway, and video on demand was going to be the big thing then. It's still going to be the big thing. It now makes more economic sense than it made. The you know, the underlying infrastructure of streaming huge digital files to our home is kind of in place thanks to the internet. And the cable companies and the DSL companies now are getting closer to the point where they can offer, you know, basically the celestial jukebox, all the movies and television you want when you want it from this kind of infinite supply.
They have it now in a lot of places, but the selection, the menu, if you will, is far from celestial.
Far from celestial, exactly. I think a cable company right now might be offering in the hundreds of movies and maybe that many television shows. And actually abroad in places like England, you're seeing a much more kind of advanced and broader rollout and broader selection. And you can sort of see the way it's going. It's starting to make more sense. You're starting to see more content. And, you know, what we've been talking about for all these years is now starting to actually feel real and available in the marketplace.
Now, we should point out video on demand is different from pay-per-view, where you can watch Spider-Man 2 at 2 o'clock, 3 o'clock, 4 o'clock, whatever. If it's on video on demand, you can watch it whenever you want. You can stop it, start it, rewind it, do anything you want with it.
Exactly. It's sort of, you know, the TiVo, the digital video recorder, you know, that behavioral change, once you realize that you weren't locked to specific channels and specific times, and you had a sense of kind of, you know, that the entire broadcast spectrum was there, you know, at your fingertips when you wanted it, that video on demand then takes that behavioral model and expands it outside the broadcast spectrum. It's not just the stuff that happens to be streamed over the, you know, the airwaves or your cable that day, but also anything that might be out there potentially.
Now, people have been able to download digital files for quite a long time now. Another difference between movies and music, though, you don't necessarily want to watch The Lord of the Rings on your computer.
You don't, and that's another big problem. I mean, you know, when you look at music, you know, the first phase of the digital music revolution was the notion that, you know, oh, wow, I can get, you know, any song I want on my computer and I can listen to it. And I'm sitting in front of my computer and I listen to music while I'm doing something else. And that's a completely compatible, you know, multitasking. Television and video is something you tend to more single task. You tend to not do it in front of your computer. There's the notion of the lean forward and lean back. Television and video is a lean back model. You want to be a far distance. And it's not easy to connect your computer to your television. I mean, you know, the options include long, gnarly cables, wireless things that are a little tricky to set up, or you're, you know, sort of drilling holes in your floor to hook it up. It's getting easier. And, you know, I think what we've seen with things like the TiVo box is actually a dedicated box that sits on top of your television that is then connected to the outside world through a dial-up or an internet connection. And that is starting to bridge the, you know, the digital world and the television world in a way that's easy and in a mass market, you know, product.
Easy is a key word here. I mean, this is still a country where there's a lot of videotape recorders out there, and most of them are still blinking 12.
Yeah. Well, you know, it's the DVR or the TiVo is, you know, for those who have it, it's a life changer. It's they completely get it. They love it. They, you know, you couldn't pry it out of their fingers. Those who don't have it sometimes don't get it, and they're also concerned about the complexity. And you know, it is still a problem right now. We're the DVRs are out there in the millions, but they're not out there in the, you know, in the hundreds of millions. And you know, I think, you know, fundamentally we've proven that it's going to be easier than the video, than the VCR. You know, I've got a full screen that you can lots of menus, and they've gotten pretty good at making it easy. It is still not easy enough for everybody, and that's why the next phase of this, which is linking it up to the internet proper, is has taken longer than we thought and is still kind of a bleeding edge thing to do.
Let's get some callers on the line. Our number, if you'd like to join our conversation, is 800-989-8255. That's 800-989-TALK. Our email address is totn@npr.org. We're talking with Chris Anderson of Wired Magazine. And joining us is Michael, who's in Ann Arbor, Michigan.
Yes, hello.
Hi.
My issue with the movies is the content is just really bad. I'd rather there's television shows like Deadwood. I subscribe to HBO, but I don't watch the movies on it. I get it solely for the series they put out.
The Sopranos and Deadwood and the Arrested.
Duval and
yep.
Feet Under, that kind of show.
Mm-hmm.
And, I mean, with the DVDs, what I end up doing is, or on demand even, which is great with HBO, is that I can watch an entire series in much accelerated than having to wait weekly for it.
Yep.
So,
to explain that on demand, if you subscribe to, for example, HBO and you like The Sopranos, the whole Sopranos season will be on demand. You can watch it already having paid for HBO, no extra charge. Isn't that right, Chris?
Yes, that is right. It's also for television series that are out on DVD. You can wait a season, you know, get it from Netflix, who you'll be hearing from later on, and do the same thing.
Right. And most of the movies they put out, I have no interest in seeing. And when I do go see it, I'm usually disappointed. Like Sideways, even though it was Academy Award nominee, I thought was just a so-so movie. Whereas a lot of the banter and the content actually seems to be higher quality on some of the television shows. Because I don't care about the next version, like version 3 of whatever action film's coming out.
All right, Michael, I expect we won't see you then in line to watch The Ring 2.
No.
All right. Thanks very much for the call.
You're welcome. Bye.
Bye-bye.
You know, there's an interesting point there, if I can break in.
Go ahead.
You know, we're talking here about the bottlenecks in distribution. And, in fact, we have more bottlenecks in theatrical distribution than we do in television these days with the explosion of digital channels. So right now you're getting more of a kind of a lowest common denominator effect in the theater, where they kind of have to get the stars and the special effects and the big epics to bring in large audience into theaters. Whereas because you have now enough cable channels and you know they have enough capacity that you can get more niche content out there. There's, you know, you can have your science fiction channel, you can have your history channel, and once we move to the internet, And other forms of distribution like Netflix, where you have no limit to how much they can carry, I think you'll find that there are, in fact, movies out there for everyone that are every bit as good as the best television that aren't available in theaters but are now increasingly available through these alternative means. And it's for many people, it's a kind of reawakening their love of movies.
Let's get Steve on the line. Steve's with us from Wichita.
Yes, indeed I am. Good afternoon. Good
afternoon.
Well, my movie watching is at the big screen theaters. I watch some videos, rent some movies, buy some movies, but for me to see a movie, we're fortunate here in Wichita we have the Warren Theater chain, the biggest screen, I believe, in the world, 4 stories tall, 80 feet wide. When you go to that movie, you're seeing a movie.
Chris Anderson, there are some things that, some movies where you really do want to see it on the big screen.
Yes, that's right. And, you know, the video cassette recorder didn't kill the theater, and you know, internet film won't either. I think what you're going to see is that, you know, the challenge for theaters is now to offer an experience that competes with the convenience and, you know, and majesty of home theater these days. I mean, with surround sound and big plasma screens and you know, high def DVDs. You actually have a very impressive experience. And so now, you know, you got to think, what are theaters going to do to pull people in? Are they going to go to, you know, to IMAX? Are they going to go to, you know, even better sound systems? Or is it just enough that, you know, we're a gregarious species and we like to go out for dinner and a movie and that's enough?
Steve, I do have to say that the popcorn is better at home.
Not when you go to the Warren Theater. I'm sorry, it's the best you can get.
Really?
Oh, you betcha.
I'll have to check it out.
Okie doke.
Thanks very much for the call.
You bet.
Bye bye.
Bye.
We're talking about the future of movie distribution. We're talking right now about technology. We'll also be talking about some business models when we come back. Are you a Netflix fiend, or do you miss the corner video store? We're taking your calls at 800-989-8255, 800-989-TALK. You can also send us email. The address is totn@npr.org. I'm Neil Conan. Back after the break, it's Talk of the Nation from NPR News. This is Talk of the Nation. I'm Neil Conan in Washington. We're talking about the future of movies, not the likelihood of a Shrek 3 or a Star Trek 10. You know they're inevitable. I think there was a Star Trek 10. But the technology you use to watch those eventual blockbusters and how they may change the industry, not just the distribution industry, but also the studios. We want to hear from you. Does having a new way to get movies change which ones you watch? You're invited to join us. Our number is 800-989-8255. That's 800-989-TALK. The email address is totn@npr.org. Our guest is Chris Anderson, editor-in-chief of Wired Magazine. And here's an email that we got from Bianca Benson in L.A. Center, Washington, or La Center, Washington. I think it's La Center, Washington. My husband and I live in a rural part of Southeast Washington. We're movie junkies and enjoy indie, foreign, and cult, especially. The mail order experience is genius. It has allowed us to see quality films as well as a couple of bombs by simply opening the mailbox. Our neighbor is also a film fan and really knows his titles. He's given us suggestions on titles to queue up, and he has not stumped the Netflix inventory yet. Reed Hastings, is Bianca Benson a cousin of yours?
No, but she's a typical American fan here. Film is so broad, and there are so many niches where people love specialty content.
Reed Hastings is the founder of Netflix. He joins us by phone from Los Gatos, California. Thanks very much for being with us.
Thank you, Neil.
Rental giants like Blockbuster are just beginning to offer similar kinds of mail order services. Does this have you shaking in your boots now?
No, we've been pioneering this market for the last 5 years. It's all we do. We do it better than anyone on the planet. We've got 2.6 million subscribers in the United States who love Netflix, and that continues to grow. And there's room for multiple players. Blockbuster will be in the market. We will. And the great news is whether it's Blockbuster Online or Netflix Online, there's over 30,000 movie titles to choose from.
Netflix just announced a partnership with TiVo. Tell us how that's going to work.
Indeed. Last year, we announced that we're working on a joint entertainment offering with TiVo. And what we see that's happening in homes is the advent of wireless networking or Wi-Fi. And Wi-Fi is becoming so cheap and so ubiquitous that over the next 5 years, you know, Wi-Fi will be in the blender, it'll be in the television, and it will be able to distribute internet content directly to the TV. So whether your content preferences are for Deadwood, as one of your callers was, or for the latest foreign and independent films, they'll be able to get it all over the internet as this wireless networking becomes ubiquitous.
Mm-hmm. How do the movie studios, though, make a profit on this?
Indeed, the movie studios, the driver of profit for them today is DVD sales. Many consumers like buying movies. That's $18 at Walmart. The movie studios get most of that money. And that's the single largest profit center for the studios. It's over half of the revenue, more than that in profit. And it will stay around for a very long time for the new release movies. But there'll be many smaller movies and catalog and television that are available for downloading.
Chris Anderson, I wanted to bring you back into this conversation. Reed Hastings and others have pointed out, people like to hold something in their hands. If you want to buy somebody a gift, you don't necessarily send them a computer file. DVDs are going to be an important factor. And as Reed Hastings just said, they're a big profit maker for the movie studios. How are the movie studios going to be convinced to distribute movies by internet where they're going to make less money?
Well, you know, I think Reed has it right, which is that there are different kinds of movies. There's you know, hits that's, you know, that they make a lot of them of their money, and they're probably going to be a little conservative and conventional in their distribution there and experimental, you know, gingerly along the margins. And then there's the more niche films where they want to reach audiences that they can't reach through traditional means. They're not making it onto the shelf spaces of Blockbuster. They're not making it into theaters. And those are the ones that really benefit from places with infinite shelf space like Netflix and the internet itself.
Mm-hmm. Reed Hastings, Netflix, let me just ask you, in 10 years, do you think that consumers will still be renting and buying DVDs?
Oh, absolutely. And I think they'll still be buying and giving CDs, music CDs to people. So if you look at the iPod, obviously it's been a huge success, but it's also stimulating CD sales. And as Chris mentioned earlier, when the VCR came about 15 years ago, some people thought the movie theaters were going to go out of business. Instead, movie theaters have continued to grow, and video continued to grow. And I think what we'll see is lots of downloading, both of music and of movies, and also lots of purchasing, because that's what we've seen in the past.
Let's get a caller in on the conversation. Jennifer joins us from Davis, California.
Oh, hi. I wanted to comment on Mr. Anderson's comments about watching DVDs or downloads on your computer. I'm 25, and I'm a college graduate, and I'm currently going to grad school. And every single person that I knows how to get DVDs on or downloads on their computers and watches them quite frequently. And we'd much rather, because we're so finance conscious,
grad student, yes.
Yes, poor grad student. We would much rather download it for free or for a much smaller fee of going out. And I think that with the people that I know don't mind watching it on their computer. We kind of live on our computer, and it's not a big deal.
Mm-hmm.
And there's also many cables to attach it to your TV if you're that into having a big screen TV.
Chris Anderson, is this a generational thing?
I think it is a generational thing. You know, obviously, she's identified two things. One is the kind of, you know, the limited disposable income issue, and the other is the kind of I'm used to living through my computer issue, which is clearly, you know, for a college student that's obviously typical. It also reflects a kind of the behavior of a generation. I mean, what she describes is also the setup. You know, I've got it at home. I download the files. I use wireless and wired connections to get it to the television. Sometimes I watch it on the TV, and you know I love it that way. But I have my wife doesn't love it as much, and some of our friends think it's well over their head. So I think we're going to see it's not going to happen as quickly as the music the switch over to digital listening happened with the iPod and music, simply because there's more elements involved, and it's a little bit more of a behavioral change than that. But I do think it's going to come.
Yeah, I could definitely see how it would take longer. But even this week, you were talking about giving gifts, like a physical gift instead of a download.
Mm-hmm.
I was given a physical gift of a ripped DVD, and that's fine for me. And it's been really helpful for DVDs that are not yet released. I don't want to, go down to the video store or something, and so I'll get well, for me, sci-fi TV series or something. And so I can understand how a certain generation or a certain group of society would still want to, in 10 years, rent or buy DVDs or CDs, but I know that I probably won't be. If I do, it's very rare. It's very rare right now.
Jennifer, thanks very much for the phone call. Reed Hastings, I wanted to ask you a little bit more about the business. As you mentioned, $18 for a DVD at Walmart. I think the market research has shown that most people would be willing to pay about $5 for a download, or that's about the price they charge for movies on demand as well. At the same time, you have the movie industry, the theater industry, and that's really what establishes what is a hit and what isn't. How is that going to change?
Well, I think the movie theaters have been a pretty stable experience. It's grown from $6 billion of revenue in the U.S. 25 years ago to about $10 billion now. And it's, you know, a very social experience to go into a movie theater, the big screen, the popcorn. And, again, the music business has gone through a lot of transformations, but concerts are pretty much the same because they're a group entertainment function, and I think movie theaters serve that function. So, you know, going forward, like, for example, your most recent caller, you know, who's doing computer-based, typically, you know, she'll still go to movie theaters, but again, it's around a date or around an occasion with a bunch of friends,
mm-hmm.
as opposed to a kind of narrow movie consumption orientation.
Reed Hastings, thank you very much for being with us today.
Thank you, Neil.
Reed Hastings is CEO of Netflix and joined us by phone from Los Gatos, California. Our last caller also mentioned ripped DVDs. Joining us now is Dean Garfield, Director of Legal Affairs for the Motion Picture Association of America. He's with us from the studios of NPR West in Culver City, California. Welcome to Talk of the Nation.
Thanks for having me, Neil. It's a pleasure.
Thank you. Piracy is a big issue.
Yes, it is. I think Jennifer alluded to it in the fact that she said that she would like to watch it on her computer and alluded to the fact of a ripped DVD. I think the one thing that I can say about that is the motion picture studios fully embrace the potential of the digital revolution. They really do want to see all the new distribution methods that are out there because it enhances the ability for people to watch movies. I think the thing that we want to ensure is that potential doesn't become a dream deferred as a result of piracy.
Mm-hmm.
So we're trying to educate the public to make clear that whether you do it online or take it from a Walmart or order it from Netflix and never return it, it's still stealing and you shouldn't do it. You should respect copyright.
Email question from Tony in Minneapolis. I was wondering if your guest could comment on how the MPAA is combating piracy in the recent shutdown of the popular LokiTorrent.com.
Absolutely. LokiTorrent is a pirate website, which is a site that uses the BitTorrent technology to transfer movie files between individuals. The site has been shut down as a result of the legal actions that were taken on the part of the Motion Picture Association and the members of that association. I think the thing to reiterate there is that our legal strategy was not aimed at the technology itself. There is nothing wrong with P2P technology. Our legal strategy is really aimed at people who abuse and misuse that technology for thievery. And so we filed a suit against the operators of LokiTorrent and eventually settled with that person for a significant sum, and the site was shut down.
Thievery. Are these things being pirated for profit, or as happened in the music industry for a long time, people thought, well, it should be free?
I think it's a bit of both. I think there are individuals who do this because there's money to be made from it. If you visit some of these websites, they're actually very sophisticated. They have advertising, and they actually earn income from doing this. There are another group of people who do it because they think it's cool. And part of our message is it's not cool to engage in theft. It's criminal, and you should stop doing it.
Well, just today we saw a story from Britain, and it involved also BitTorrent. They're producing, as many people know, a new series of Doctor Who television programs, and I think much to their consternation found it was somehow leaked onto the web, and now people in Britain are watching it. But it's pretty cool to be able to watch Doctor Who 3 weeks before the BBC puts it on the television.
I I think there are people who have that interest and who want to see things before it's generally available. Much of what we do and we understand is the movie industry is we tell stories, and we try to use technology to tell those stories well. And that shows that people are interested in hearing and seeing those stories. What we want people to do is to enjoy those stories legally and legitimately. And to the issue that Jennifer raised before, there are lots of legal means to enjoy your movie legally and legitimately, particularly online if you enjoy watching it on your computer. There are on-demand services like MovieLink, MovieBeam, Ruckus, Cinema Now. There are a growing number of these services that provide you the opportunity to watch movies online. You can either go to the theater and pay to see a great movie, or you can get it video on demand through one of these services. You have a lot of options, and you should make use of them.
We're talking with Dean Garfield of the Motion Picture Association of America and Chris Anderson, editor-in-chief of Wired Magazine, about the future of the movie business. You're listening to Talk of the Nation from NPR News. And let me ask you both, at the end of this month, the Supreme Court is going to hear arguments in the case pitting the studios against the peer-to-peer network Grokster. What's at stake here? Dean Garfield, you go first.
I think what's at stake is really whether copyright is still going to be respected as we move forward and as new technologies are developed. I think that at bottom, what this case is about are a group of people who've taken technology and abused it and misused it. And so the case is not really about whether P2P will continue to survive or whether innovation will continue. Certainly it will. The question is whether, as these new technologies are developed and it becomes easier to distribute content, will copyright continue to be protected and respected? Mm-hmm. And we argue that it should be.
Chris Anderson, the Grokster case has been compared to the old Sony Betamax case, in which the Supreme Court said, well, you know, yeah, these things can, you can record movies on them, but there's other purposes. This should be allowed to go. People say that case opened the way for innovation, all kinds of innovation, including all the technology we're seeing now.
Exactly. I mean, the distinction is between treating the technology as criminal versus treating the usage as criminal. And, you know, in the Betamax case, they decided I think wisely, that because the technology had legitimate non-infringing uses, that it should be allowed to go out, and that instead we should stop the pirates from piracy, but not stop the technology. And the same thing applies now to peer-to-peer. Are we going to, you know, there are plenty of non-piracy things you can do with peer-to-peer. It's a fantastic technology, you know, and a generation has grown up recognizing that's what they want. And are we going to snuff that flame out because it is sometimes used for piracy, or are we going to find a way to treat the pirates as pirates and treat the technology as something else?
I actually fully agree with Chris. I think what the Supreme Court did in the Sony Betamax case was to really call for a balance. And I think a balance can be reached in this Grokster case. There is a way, and we've advocated that, to separate technology from the misuse of that technology by bad actors. We did not sue peer-to-peer. We think peer-to-peer is great. The motion picture studios have fully embraced peer-to-peer technology. What we've asked the court to do is sanction the individuals, the Groksters and the Music Cities, who've misused peer-to-peer to earn a living from copyright theft.
Let's see if we can squeeze in one more call. Jack is with us from San Francisco.
Hi, yeah. Fascinating discussion, and it's been one of my passions now for the last 9 years. I've started two companies coming at this, one from the rights management point of view, a company called Secure Media, to build the foundation technology so we can distribute content over the Internet in a secure and safe and controlled way. And for the last 2 years, I've been building a company called Alio TV, which is bringing a service that will launch by the end of this year that basically lets you do what Netflix does, but directly to your TV over the Internet, and you do not need a computer to do it. You just need a high-speed Internet connection. In fact, we had the same epiphany that Reed, you had a little clip from him earlier. He had a late fee. We all use Netflix, and we love it. We think it's the best thing that's come around for video distribution in the history of video. And we all said, but we can do that better, and we can do it over the Internet, then we should do that. And so,
well, Jack, perhaps appropriately, you're getting the last word on this. That may be the future. We appreciate the phone call.
Okay, and it's coming. It'll be here much faster than anybody's predicted on this call.
Okay. Thank you very much, Chris Anderson. We appreciate your time today. As always, Wired Magazine Editor-in-Chief joined us from KQED in San Francisco, and Dean Garfield, Director of Legal Affairs for the Motion Picture Association of America, was kind enough to join us from the studios of NPR West in Culver City, California. When we come back from the break, Congress summons baseball stars to testify about steroids under oath. I'm Neil Conan. It's Talk of the Nation from NPR News.